Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
And thank you and welcome here to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. It's another great episode, and this one is certainly going to resonate with female athletes. And I am excited to be joined here today in this episode by Katie Krall. She's in her first season as the development coach with the Boston Red Sox. While in uniform, Krall coaches first base, integrates data into player plans, oversees advanced scouting and pitch design for the Red Sox AA affiliate, the Portland Sea Dogs. She spent 2 years with the Cincinnati Reds as a baseball operations analyst, developing and integrating new tools and technology to improve baseball operations and decision-making processes, provided comprehensive scouting coverage and statistical request support for the front office. Krall also previously worked for a year and a half at Major League Baseball in the commissioner's office in New York City. She was the first female chosen for MLB's inaugural diversity fellowship program, an initiative designed to promote women and promote people of color in the front office and executive roles. At the commissioner's office, Krall also advised clubs on a 40-man roster management and also on MLB rules compliance, major league administration, and salary arbitration. And then also in 2016, she planned the World Series trophy tour for the Chicago Cubs. And the following summer, she was an assistant general manager in the Cape Cod Baseball League. She received her BA from Northwestern University and MBA from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. We are very proud to welcome in Katie Krall. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And as we dive in, talk with a lot of different people in the sports world. And one of the things I always like to start with is, who was your favorite athlete growing up and why?
Oh my gosh, this might be controversial since I now work for the Red Sox, but Derek Jeter by a wide margin. I read his autobiography when I was in seventh grade, The Life You Imagine, and it really resonated with me.
Oh, that's really cool. So as you grew up, where did you grow up, and were you living in New York at all? Or was this just because you read the book and you were following Derek Jeter?
Grew up right outside Chicago, but my great-granduncle, Nick Etten, actually played for the Yankees in the 40s. He actually set the American League home run record 1 year. I think he hit like 21 or 22 bombs, which by today's standards isn't a whole lot, but it was during the war years. And so a lot of players like Ted Williams were, you know, overseas. So he was there in the outfield for the Yankees. So grew up really like having that history. And then the 2009 Yankees, I would say that was one of the teams, in addition to the 2005 White Sox, that really kind of ushered me into the sport and made me fall in love with the game.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I can certainly appreciate that. And it must also kind of give you a different perspective to have had somebody in your family play professional baseball.
Definitely. And my godfather was the bullpen coach of the Minnesota Twins for 32 years. And so the number that I wear, 43, is in honor of him. So definitely have a great reverence and respect for the more traditional side of the game and what it takes not only as an individual, but for a family to be part of professional baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. I've talked with a lot of different people who have been in sports and have had family members in sports. I can speak to Todd Blylevin, who had obviously his dad, Bert Blylevin. And you can see just the understanding that an athlete has when they've had someone else in the family. It gives you just such a leg up, I feel like, because you've been around it.
Completely. And I think that even extends to the players from like an amateur draft perspective, like when you're thinking about like Bo Bichette or like some guys who have had their fathers around who can show them what it means to be in a clubhouse on a daily basis and how to go about your business. Like we have a catcher with the Portland Sea Dogs, Eli Marrero, whose dad played in the big leagues with the Cardinals and a few other organizations. So yeah, there definitely is, I think, that understanding of what it takes to succeed at the highest level.
Yeah, that makes sense. So then there's obviously the fact that you have quite a resume. And what jumps off the page to me is obviously you were the first female chosen for MLB's inaugural diversity fellowship program. And I want to hear more about that program and have you explain that.
Definitely. So I knew I was going to graduate from Northwestern in 3 years. And my original plan was to stay on campus sister for the fourth year, so have the true college experience. And an English professor actually sent me the link to apply for the diversity fellowship, just with one line, Greg. He said, I think you might be interested in this. And so I went to the homepage and it was, you know, this hype video, you know, work in baseball, be in baseball operations, help design rosters, be part of the game on its most granular level. And it really stuck out to me. And I applied for the club fellowship position. So that would have been like with the Phillies, with the Cubs. I really hadn't considered the commissioner's office level or the macro level role because I just didn't think I was qualified. And so in January of 2018, I received an email just from this blind address, like MLB Diversity Fellowship at MLB.com, asking if I wanted to apply for the commissioner's office fellowship. And I was like, oh my gosh, sure, I'll toss my hat in the ring. And then a few weeks later, I received an email saying that I had an interview the next Friday with Kim Ng, who eventually became the first female GM in the history of baseball with the Marlins, but at the time was still an SVP at the commissioner's office. So spoke to Kim and then spoke to three other senior vice presidents and then was offered the job the day after my 21st birthday.
That's a pretty good birthday gift.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was hectic, but it was such an honor to be part of that class because obviously, you know, it was not only promoting gender and racial equality, but it was in a game that I love. So I felt very privileged to have the opportunity.
Oh, that's really cool. I like that. And then also thinking about the opportunities, obviously, that you've had in sports and going back to that and again, breaking a lot of different barriers. I'm really curious, was there a female athlete or role model that you looked up to?
Definitely. I played tennis when I was a little girl. So Serena Williams, Billie Jean King, I'm actually reading her autobiography right now. And it's amazing. Like not only what she encountered off the court, but on the court, just these women who were steadfast in their love of the sport and who had this unwavering desire to make meaningful change. I think it's so powerful. Like you look at Megan Rapinoe being on like the biggest stage in the world and campaigning for what she believed in. I think people forget like how difficult it is to perform in an elite level while also, you know, pushing for human rights, pushing for gender equality. Like those can be like significant burdens to bear. And then to do it in the spotlight, I just have such respect and appreciation for those women. And they definitely were role models and heroes for me of people that I hope to aspire to be like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also feel like one of the things, especially with name, image, and likeness now at the NCAA level, I feel that that actually is going to be probably the biggest change in female and women's sports since Title IX. And the reason I feel that way is because now it's going to give female athletes a much bigger platform to share what they are fighting for and give them a voice and showcase their talent with video clips and everything else that, you know, we see it even at the NCAA basketball level where Sonona Prince had that video, you know, 2 years ago now that created significant change by just showing the drastic comparison between the men's, you know, weight room and the women's weight room. And I feel like social media is going to be a big part of this. Do you agree?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I think I couldn't be more on board with you. I think a few years ago, there was an article commemorating the WNBA and the author wrote like the importance of the narratives and showcasing the stories. And I think social media is a great platform that doesn't have a lot of barriers where you can show the discrepancies or you can put out your story. You know, like there's a reason why people want to watch Red Sox games, right? Like they care about the players, they're vested in the arc of the franchise, like the same thing has to happen for women's sports. Like it's not enough to just list the box score or just to say, here was the final score. It's here were the players, here's where they come from, here's what they want. Like that's when you really develop that rapport and connection between fans and athletes.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that we're going to start to see a lot more of it. And I'm just excited to see how it's all going to play out. Of course, this year is also the 50th anniversary of Title IX. And I'm curious, from your perspective, maybe one story, because I'm sure you have many of them, that stick out that you were like, this is not fair, or I deserve this opportunity, or you had to fight, you know, a little bit to kind of position yourself as qualified or something like that.
Definitely. When I was on the Cape in 2017, when I was assistant GM for the Hyannis Harbor Hawks, we had a coach who referred to me as the girl who does the stats. And, you know, he was very reluctant and resistant to having me in some of those spaces because he had always seen them as, you know, male dominated. And so it took a significant amount of effort on my part in order to develop an understanding and to let him know that I had some insights that could provide value to the team. And, you know, we had some really good guys, Brendan Donovan, Nick Sandlin, both have service time. Brendan's with the Cardinals, Nick was with the Guardians. And so thinking about that, like I believe that I was treated differently because of my gender, and the onus was on me to make sure that I was seen as someone who could add value and someone who could be in those spaces. But yes, initially his failure to learn my name definitely stung a little bit.
What kind of advice would you give to a young girl or a female athlete that might be in that space or in that situation where it seems like what you did was just go about your business, prove yourself, right? Versus maybe taking the role of, oh, you know, you're not thinking of me the right way. And then like kind of creating this friction, you know, between like the male and the female, because that's probably not going to, I've never been in this situation, right? So I'm trying to help our female listeners. Like I think about 15-year-olds in high school that are going to fight this, you know, fight. And I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on what you think is the best way to go about it and kind of, in my mind, just prove yourself, right?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, you're going to have to work twice as hard as anyone else. And it's an unfortunate reality, but I think it allows you to build your skill set in a way that makes you even more qualified when you finally do get that opportunity and that seat at the table. With that being said, like something that I wish I had done more so in my career and that I hope that women do is to, you know, call out misbehavior. Or if something isn't respectful or if you feel like you're not necessarily being treated in a fair way, like the only way for people to learn that a joke is inappropriate or if, you know, there's a discrepancy in treatment is by acknowledging it. I think you're doing a disservice to yourself and a disservice to women as a whole if you simply brush it under the rug. Like I would really encourage women to not be scared to say something if they feel like it's putting them in a lesser or subservient position.
Yeah. I also want to talk about on the lighter or happier side of things, the other side you've seen, which I'm sure is when you're out on the field and there are probably girls that are like, look, there she is. There she is. Tell me, you got to have at least one or two stories there too.
Oh my gosh. Definitely. Yes. So, Jesse with the Sea Dogs, who's our head of ticket operations, he came up to me after a game a few weeks ago. It was like a perfect day. It was like 75 degrees. We had gotten a win. And he said, there's a little girl here who just thinks you're the coolest thing in the world. Will you meet her? And so I came over and I talked to her for a little bit. And she was so sweet. Her name's Lydia. I think she's like 7 or 8 years old. And afterwards, her mom said to Jesse, she was like, I can't believe that Katie actually took the time to like speak to her. Like, I signed a ball for her. She was like, the ball's now in Lydia's room. And I sent the photo of me and Lydia to my family and my twin sister. And they were like, oh my gosh, it looks like she's meeting a Disney princess. You know? Like it's such like a cool thing that, oh wow, like I can really be a role model for these girls. And They can go to a game this summer or they can see me on the road and be like, hey, wait a minute, there's somebody in a uniform and a ponytail on the field. Like, who is that? Could that be me someday? Like I never saw anyone on the field as a coach when I was growing up. I never saw a woman at first base. So That definitely has been incredibly rewarding and even more exciting than I had probably anticipated when I took the job in January.
Yeah, that is really cool. I like that story, and I'm sure there's more of that to come. And I can tell you, I've got a 10-year-old that would do the same thing when we get down there to a game. So she's got a little baseball collection, by the way. We make it a tradition when we come down to a Sea Dogs game. We're always trying to get a ball. We're always, you know, trying to just, you know, meet the players, that kind of thing. So I can see how that would work. That's what I used to do as a kid too. When I went to Fenway, I would always be, you know, trying to do that. So it's a nice little, you know, it's a nice little tradition to be able to.
Yeah. I can't wait to meet her.
Yeah. Let's see. So what's the next big thing in your mind that you're working on, or maybe your next goal that you have in your career?
Wrapped up my MBA from the University of Chicago. So that was a significant milestone in June that I checked off. So finally enjoying a little bit more free time, not as much as I expected, but that definitely was something that I'm very proud of. I would say I would love to be either with a big league coaching staff or back in a front office in a high level executive role, whether that's as a director of baseball operations, an assistant GM. I think having experience at the league office with one of the smallest market teams in baseball, as an analyst with one of the biggest market teams, as a coach, I think I've rounded out my skill set in a number of ways, and I love working with and managing people. So that would definitely be a milestone that I would look forward to and something that I try to prepare myself for on a daily basis.
That makes sense. The other thing that kind of comes along, and I see kind of some similarities in our work, which is timing can be everything. And I felt like when I started my business with Pliable, name, image, and likeness came along in the NCAA level, and I was like, this is amazing. In your world, it seems like analytics has come such a far distance and is now very important, so that if someone is very well versed in it, which you clearly are, as you have grown, and there are probably older coaches that are not as deep in it as you have been, do you feel like that came along at the right time for you?
Oh, completely, Greg. I am absolutely a beneficiary of my time. I think it's interesting the way hiring works in baseball. You see different roles getting a lot of priority. So like for the past maybe 5 to 8 years, it was hiring data scientists and analysts. And I think that still is a great need and void to many degrees. But I think you're also seeing a lot of like software engineers being hired now, or people who can create user interfaces or visuals that allow you to harness the information that's had to make decisions quickly. So like if you're in the trade deadline and you're debating, you know, which prospects should we send to a different club, you're not looking through 5 or 6 websites or apps, you have everything centralized in one place. So for me, yes, I think having my background, if it had been 15 or 20 years ago when I got out of Northwestern, I don't think I would have had the same roles available to me. I absolutely think that the change that is coming in baseball, I hit the wave at the right time.
And for people that don't know about analytics, you know, we hear about it. Could you give us a good example, like you kind of just did there a little bit, but maybe an in-game situation that people might not be thinking about how analytics can be used?
Totally. So something I do on a daily basis with our hitting coach is prepare our hitters for the opposing pitchers. So for example, let's say that we have Kyle Harrison, who we just pitched against the other night for the Richmond Flying Squirrel. He's coming in, and I'll maybe break down his mix. So let's say he has a four-seam fastball, he's got a changeup, he's working on it, a slider. So I'll talk about how the slider moves. So I might, you know, say numbers, but I also might say to Cole Cottom, our catcher, you know, it's got like 2 plane sweep. You know, it's going to be more like a slurve than like a true slider. Or with the changeup, I might say it has a lot of fade. So I'm not going to say it has -8.1 horizontal movement, but I'm going to, you know, like I'm going to explain it to them in a way that's digestible. And what's really interesting, Greg, is like, if you have a reliever come in, you only really have less than 5 seconds.
Right.
So what are you going to communicate, and what's going to be most valuable in that moment? For a lot of guys, it's like the max velo, like with Hudson Potts or Christian Koss, what's the hardest you could possibly throw? Cause I know they know that they then have the ability to time themselves. So if it's 98, they know that's the quickest they're going to have to catch up with. If it's 95, they have that heuristic in their head. So yeah, in game, I would say it's a greater emphasis on the hitting side. And then pregame, it's almost always exclusively pitching.
Interesting. And so I'm even curious in real time, because that's the world we live in right now. Let's say you got a player on deck and there's a pitching change. Like, are you then trying to communicate that as quickly as possible, you know, even to that hitter who's maybe in the circle going, who's coming in? Like, are they looking for this information that quickly?
Yes. And then if you go to Sea Dogs games this summer, like there have been multiple times where I've like, you know, snuck out from the top step to like scurry over to the on deck circle and communicate something. But that's only Greg if I know that player needs and wants it. So like, for example, we have several guys on the team who do not want any information. They don't want to know what the pitcher throws. They don't want to know how hard it is. They don't want to know the percentages. They don't want to know if it's 20% changeup or 80% changeup. And so from that perspective, I'm not going to do that, right? Because I have to respect how they prepare. And I think that is a great emphasis at the Red Sox, is on individuality, where I know a lot of other organizations have like these archetypes of players that they want and the way that they consume information. And I think what I love about Boston is nothing's ever forced on you. It's all organic and the players are allowed to be proactive in terms of what they're looking for.
I'm curious how many players in your mind want the information versus the ones that don't. I mean, it must be continuing to grow, I would imagine, in the positive direction.
Yeah, I would say it's almost 70% of both pitchers and hitters who are receptive to it. Like, there are certainly those who like work with Rapsodo and TrackMan units in the off season, so they're a little bit more well-versed. But again, like they are the individuals who necessarily like don't want to hear anything and just want to walk up to the plate or take the mound, I would say they're increasingly becoming the minority because, to your point, they've kind of been baptized in it since they started their professional careers.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then I'm thinking about when it comes to the pandemic, we all kind of have a pandemic story. And that's when, you know, I had to be more pliable. And that's, you know, why I created my company. I'm curious if you have a pandemic story or maybe a way that you adapted in your career and maybe became more pliable.
Absolutely. So I was with the Reds in 2020 and 2021. So for the majority of the pandemic, I was with the Reds, but we were working remotely. And I was part of the search that hired a new director of analytics. So obviously like a very key role for us. And I had previously been working almost exclusively in baseball operations. When I left the commissioner's office, that was the role that I was hired for. It would be baseball ops. So who should we sign? What should we pay them? And pro scouting, you know, like writing reports, aggregating information, thinking about trade candidates. And so suddenly with this new director of analytics, Richard Anderson, who came from the Angels, who I had an amazing rapport with, he was pulling me in on code reviews. He was exposing me to DevOps and CPUs and, you know, all these crazy acronyms that I had never seen before, and, you know, database infrastructure and data ingestion. And, you know, I had some exposure to it, but not a ton. And so for me, it was really a wonderful opportunity, because so many meetings were virtual, to, you know, gain this vocabulary, to be immersed in this world. And I think because we weren't in person, and because it was so easy to send me like an extra Zoom link and to toss me a few extra projects, Richard really gave me the opportunity to become part of something that I believe is the backbone of every front office. So from that perspective, I definitely had to be dynamic, because I was kind of a rookie in this space, but it was without a doubt one of the best educations I've ever received. And I owe a great debt to him for giving me that exposure.
Well, and two, one of the things that's obviously changed with the pandemic and was coming anyway, but I think it went into warp speed, is the use of video, right? So You're consuming video, I'm sure, all the time. You're watching video all the time. That was coming. But now, even during the pandemic, we see this with high school recruiting, where, you know, videos are being shared, recruitment videos, things like that. Talk to me about the role that video has been playing.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other day, actually, one of our relievers, Jake Thompson, he came up to me before the game and he asked if we could look at some of his sliders that he's been working on. He's trying to develop more sweep to it. And so I took a video of a ball that was put in place, like a single that he gave up on a slider, and then a slider where it was a swinging strike. And what he wanted to do, which is kind of interesting because this is actually at Northwestern, like how we would always look at paintings in art history class, we would like juxtapose one next to the other. Yeah. So I guess my liberal arts background was coming in that moment. And so then I was able to show him like, okay, you know, like visually, this is your release point on the like better slider where you got the swinging strike. And this is your release point where the ball was put in play. So like in real time, he was able to kind of take a look at those images and see which one was more effective. And then we had a conversation about like what he felt or what cues he should use. So for him, it was, you know, making sure he's not getting over the top, like it's a curveball, that he was coming across his body more to generate that sweep. So yeah, video was super powerful in that moment. And I think resonated with him far more so, again, than if I had just said, well, this one had 2 more inches of sweep than this one. You know what I mean? Like everything needs context and everything needs kind of like thresholds. So yeah, it was awesome. And he's been a great guy to work with. And I think definitely like more of a visual learner. So videos provided that too.
I'm a visual learner myself. So I can absolutely appreciate that. Let's talk about, as we kind of wrap up here, your advice for today's athletes. And, you know, working in minor league sports, I'm sure you've seen guys come up, do well. I'm sure you've seen come up and do not so well. What are some pieces of advice, just general ballpark, that you could give to, you know, athletes that are coming up, whether it's in, you know, baseball or any other sport?
Absolutely, Greg. I think it's important to treat, and I'll use a baseball analogy, like treat every day like it's your big leagues. Don't say, oh, well, I'm going to start lifting, or, oh, I'm going to eat better once I get to the show, or once I get to, you know, a D1 program. Like, really take the time to prepare every day. One of my mantras has always been spend your life studying for pop quizzes. So find ways where you can really be proactive and develop your routines, because you don't want to look back and say, oh, well, if I had tried a little bit more, if I had put a little bit more energy towards my sport or getting to know my teammates, I could have elevated myself. You know, like, do it now. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. That's really good advice. I like that. Obviously, you've got a lot of people here in Maine, but even across the country that are following you you know, your success. How can people maybe get in touch with you or certainly keep up with everything you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. Come visit me at Sea Dogs Games or Instagram and LinkedIn. Like, I love meeting people and hearing their stories about how sports have impacted their lives and their goals, especially female athletes and women who are in this space. So always happy to talk.
And on that note, that brings up a really good question, because I want to make sure that I educate fans. When is the best time for a little girl to try to come up to you? When should the parents try to arrive at the game? Where should they go? Like, how does that work best for you? Because I want to make, I know I've dealt with players and coaches before, and I want to make it as easy as possible to bring in these young girls and make your life easy.
Definitely post-game for me, Greg.
Post-game, okay.
I think, yeah, there's a lot going on before the game, like whether it's bullpens or making sure like our data from the night before came in, or just ad hoc conversations. But after the game, after hopefully a Sea Dogs win, there's a lot more free time. So there's like a gate that people can come and wait at, or like come on the field, or on Sundays, they sometimes run the bases after games. So yeah, that would be the ideal window.
Okay. Is that gate there off to the right of the dugout, the Sea Dogs dugout? Is that the one? Okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I will make sure that I communicate that with all the athletes and all the little youngsters that I know, because you're an incredible role model, and want to congratulate you certainly on your success. Look forward to getting down to a Sea Dogs game, many Sea Dogs games actually this summer. You'll find little Kelsey out there. I'll have her wear her Mission E50 shirt, which is Bible's mission to help increase the popularity of women's sports. So.
That's awesome, Greg. I can't wait to meet her. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, want to say thank you for your time. Good luck. And we will see you again soon. And again, very, very powerful story. So keep up the great work.
Thanks so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
That has been Katie Krall here on the Athlete Brand Advisor podcast. Thank you for listening. I'm Greg Glenn. Glad you could tune in. Stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.